All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Tuesday, October 17th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
James Davis.
And we're from Daily Fantasy Sports Rankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Time right now to head over and grab a free trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. DFSR.com/NBA will get you that free trial to start the NBA season, which starts tonight. We're going to be doing our NBA podcast as well today, so go check that out on the same, it's under the same DFSR network. It's just Daily Fantasy Sports Rankings NBA podcast. So go check that out as well. Grab a free 3-day trial, free for 3 days. And then I think for a very brief time, it's going to be $29.95. And then our prices are going to go up as we're into NBA season. So go, now is your time to lock in that low number. Go check it out. DFSR.com/NBA. All right, buddy, week six, NFL in the books. Pretty good week from the old DFSR side. Probably our best week yet, I would say, a projection system standpoint, especially
which you could have projected by how little we wound up playing for some reason that remains to be seen. I think you had tried to put your lineups in late. For me, it was like a third of what I normally play just because I was busy with my wife out of town. And good times all to be had.
Our DraftKings lineups especially was – it just really kind of hit on everything we wanted to happen. Ingram, we'll talk about some of these guys and some of the performances that what we learned from this week. There was a decent amount to take away here. You know, DraftKings gets there on guys like Ingram, got the carries that we thought he would see. Jerick McKinnon saw enough volume in the offense. We can talk about that situation a little bit. He gets there as well. Gurley wasn't great, but didn't kind of matter. And then guys like Landry, Fitzgerald, the targets were there for a lot of our receivers. So all in all, a really solid week, really feeling good about it, especially after week five that felt like everything that could go wrong did go wrong. This is where football does to you, right? It kind of gets in your head about what the truth of certain matters are. And then all of a sudden it flips back.
Just plays mind games with you. Like we'll see with basketball, when you only play one game a week, it's easy to spend a lot of time thinking about stuff that doesn't matter very much. Whereas in basketball, you know, if LeBron James comes out and has one bad game, we're not going to sit thinking about it for a week and try to rationalize why it happened. We'll just be like, it was one game. Let's move on with our lives, you know?
For sure. And so, and basketball does offer, just a completely different experience. Like I said, go check out today's podcast. We're going to go through today's podcast for NBA, at least. We're going to talk about, some basic strategies you can take. And, we'll break down the two-game slate, but also just like some general just DFS kind of stuff you can do. And you hear some background noise from me today. I'm traveling. I'm down in New Orleans for the week. It's not really that humbly brag. It's interesting. I got a car alarm going off in the background. I'm not going to be able to go politely tell my neighbors here to keep it down, I don't think. But Louisiana actually has DFS is legal, which I had forgotten about until I got here and went in to log in to start signing up for some basketball lineups and was blocked out of all my accounts. So that still happens here in America. DFS is still not be able to play in some states, which I kind of just forgotten about. Mostly because the big states you can kind of do it in, and there's some stragglers like this one, but it feels kind of crazy. Like a city like New Orleans, where it seems like kind of anything goes as you walk around the streets.
You can't play fantasy sports contests for money online, though, Doug. You go grab your beer and go walk around the streets and buy yourself a prostitute, but you will not, I repeat, not play a game on DraftKings tonight.
Oh, yeah, if you just want to openly, heavily drink just in front of, like, just as you walk down the streets, it's like you do your window shopping, no problem, fully game on. Yeah, right, if you want to log into FanDuel and put a couple bucks in for a basketball contest or a football, thank God I'll be home before football, because I was actually starting to really kind of panic about that. But, so all you, if you're in Louisiana and you listen to this podcast and still don't play, you still don't play DFS or you're, I don't know, VPNing, so you are playing, I feel for you, because I really suck. All right, week six. I mean, the biggest news here, right, is Rodgers. He gets that shoulder crunched on a kind of a swing out pass, kind of like a know nothing play, really, when you watch it. And he was rolling out of the pocket. He threw the pass and then just kind of got rolled up on by the D lineman, and it turns out it's a broken collarbone. I mean, there's very few guys in the NFL that you just can't stand to lose. You can't stand to lose your quarterback when he's good. Rodgers was just about the best. What do we do to the Packers? I mean, really their whole offense now, that it's going to be for the Brett Hundley for the foreseeable future.
Kill them all to start and figure out if this new dude can actually complete passes to people. That's all you can really do. And sometimes it happens. Sometimes, like in Minnesota, Case Keenum comes in and has guys he can throw passes to. We've seen, especially not the main guy, like, so in this case, Jordy Nelson, if you consider him the main guy, somebody else could step in and become the backup's favorite guy that's too cheap right now, but I wouldn't speculate on who that is for sure for the upcoming week. So just to wait and see. Let's see what happens for week seven.
Yeah, no, Hundley's been a backup. I think this is his second year out of UCLA. He looked like not Aaron Rodgers. I don't know. There's no way you're going to replace him. Rodgers is just such a unique talent in that he's got the arm strength that's just about the best in the league. And then he can also just, I mean, the real reason that his receivers are so successful too is because all the plays that break down, he still finds ways to complete passes to guys
just
like
Nelson.
Just
absurd accuracy too. Like he just terrifically accurate, you know, unlike Alex Smith, who makes less ambitious throws. Rodgers is still happy to throw downfield and connect with people who are, you know, running really far away from him. He can still complete passes to him. So yeah, Hundley, the 54% completion percentage. I mean, obviously he's going to look lost just coming in. He didn't expect to play for three more years probably. So we'll see what a week of reps with the first team does for him. Maybe it'll be a good thing. But yeah, as of right now, not looking good.
Yeah, they still have weapons. Like I said, those guys, I'm always a little confused about the Green Bay guys though, because that's always a little chicken or the egg stuff for me. Like, I'm not sure if they're good because they have Rodgers or if Rodgers takes these guys that are good and makes them better. You know, I've read certain things about some of the receivers, you know, Randall Cobb specifically, I remember reading for a while that most people just thought from a talent level, he wasn't very good at all. But it's just when Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback, it kind of it gets a little confusing about where, you know, what's first and what's second. So we'll definitely wait and see. They're underdogs to the Saints this week by 6 or 7 points to start. Yeah, -6 to start for the Saints going into Green Bay. So, you know, Vegas doesn't have a lot of confidence really of what's happening here for the Packers without Rodgers, as well they shouldn't. And the Saints defense actually hasn't been terrible too. So it's not even like you're getting the Saints at home against this complete sieve of a defense. The Packers situation is definitely one that we're going to want to take a wait and see approach on. Other things happen, you know, not a huge amount of other injury news. Looks like Jameis Winston's going to be day to day with a shoulder injury. There's no line in that game, so Vegas is probably waiting on whether or not, you know, what his status is going to be. I'm not sure it's going to totally matter going into Buffalo because I don't think that's going to be a spot we really want to play him anyway. I mean, very briefly looked ahead at this week's pricing. So just on its face, I could really pretty much make the assumption that Jameis isn't going to guy that would really target anyway. And then Leonard Fournette tweaked his ankle, though he didn't seem to be too worried about what that would mean for him going forward. He said he just rolled it a little bit. So there's really only guys that are relevant that came out of week six with any major injury things. I don't think I'm forgetting anybody. The Rodgers thing really shadowed most of the injury news. But let's get and talk about some of the performances from this week, because there's some crazy ones. Let's start at running back. So Adrian Peterson can't get off the bench for the Saints. It's really hard to tell, you know, from game film. I always caveat this by saying I don't watch game film. I read people that watch game film and just kind of trust their takes on things. So I'm not going to sit down and I'm never going to be the guy that sits down and watches game film. But
how the offensive line runs from this direction and that direction and how they break out.
I didn't play football, so it's going to be harder for me to even figure that out to begin with. But there's so many guys out there that just do such good breakdowns of what these actual X's and O's are, so I'm happy to trust them. A lot of these guys did not think that they kind of thought that Peterson was washed. Didn't look washed. 6 for 134, 2 touchdowns. This is exactly what Arizona needed in terms of, like, you know, their offense was sputtering because they just simply couldn't get any run game going.
Yeah.
Where do we kind of slot Peterson in now? I can't imagine they care about running him into the ground. Like, this is a year replacement for them, maybe tops 2 years or something like that. He's not going to be around forever. You know, where do we want to put a guy like his, you know, usage and carries going forward? 26 is a completely elite number. There were some huge running back performances this week across the board, but he strikes me as the guy that I'm like, he's the one I wonder the most about because it's a completely new situation, but Arizona kind of made their intentions clear to start.
Yeah, I would say he's a chalk play next week. I mean, 6,300 on FanDuel is just too little for a guy who even has this kind of upside, much less, you know, what he might do on a week-to-week basis. Now, we don't know for sure that this is how they plan to use him in perpetuity, but given that they did right out of the gate and it worked, it's hard to imagine that they'll fix something that isn't broken, given how broken the running game was before he showed up. So, yeah, I think Peterson, just a phenomenal play. I mean, the pedigree's there, obviously. He maybe didn't look good in New Orleans, but that could have easily been the types of situations they were using him in, you know, primarily short yardage, not really getting him in the flow of the game. So I think he's a great play going forward until the price climbs.
He faces a Rams defense that's been, I guess, solid-ish this season. I got to look at some of their defensive numbers. It's just really these new kind of situations. They are underdogs here to the Rams. They are -3.5 underdogs going into L.A. This would be an interesting situation. I set him right now. I don't know if you find this to be correct. I set him right now at 17 carries and at 1.5 targets. I don't want to, you know, we can't really ever go with these guys to like the 24 carries range. No. Even the best guys don't get that kind of implied usage going into a week, because really when things average out over the course of the season, if you're getting 20 touches out of the backfield for the course of a season, you're like in the Le'Veon Bell category of carries. Maybe, you know, he's probably a little bit higher. The 17 sure. sound about right to you? 17 carries, a 1.5 targets or something like that as a floor for him, or maybe as a mean sort of like usage going for him going forward?
It seems reasonable to me. I think the bigger issue is going to be trying to figure out what the good baseline is for what he does on the average carry, just because Arizona is a new situation for him. You know, any projections by the preseason will have him being on a totally different team. Anything based on his year-to-date stats is based on a totally different situation and a different team. So I think really the battle is not going to be so much figuring out the battle is figuring out the carries, but it's figuring out what each of those carries is worth. So that's something that we'll have to look a lot more closely at going through the week, trying to figure out what to do for Sunday.
Other news, like sort of in that same vein, when the Saints got rid of Peterson, they turned the reins over to Ingram. That was something that we kind of banked on going into this week, that we had talked about last week, that we thought that a lot of Peterson's kind of the carries Peterson was getting in the offense, which was like six a game, were going to mostly go to Ingram. And that really was the case. He had a huge game, carried the ball 25 times, was the goal line guy, which you love to see, 114 yards, 2 touchdowns. Do you think that this is going to be, you know, the Saints' biggest issue going into before last week was we just didn't know. They just had too many guys, too many mouths to feed in that backfield. Mm-hmm. Completely getting rid of Peterson and turning it over to basically Ingram. Kamara did get a decent amount of touches as well. Do we see Ingram starting to slot his way into maybe that running back one category? I mean, he had 5 catches as well. The guy was amazing. He was exactly what you wanted to see. 30 touches overall. Does he start entering, you think, like that? Oh, man, I hate to say it, like the Todd Gurley, Jordan Howard, Le'Veon Bell, like this group of guys that are just going to get insane amount of carries for their team every week?
Yeah, I love Ingram going forward. I mean, he was a cash game play or a chalk cash game play last week and performed for people 28 fantasy points on 30% ownership. He was great on a yards per carry basis, great out of the backfield. We did see Alvin Kamara touch the ball a reasonable amount here too, with 10 carries and 4 targets. So it's, you know, it's hard to say, like you don't expect them to have, what is that, even 45 possessions or 45 plays go to their running back duo. So like that to me strikes me as unsustainable. But if it's even 75% of that, I think Ingram is still a very good play. It's just the problem with that New Orleans Detroit game is it just got so out of hand. You know, they scored 52 points. So, you know, if you scale all that back by 75%, is it still a viable play? I think so on 7,100, but I guess I would temper my enthusiasm about Kamara if people are thinking about playing him.
Yeah, no, that was the big question I think people had. You know, when you saw, you know, just like, you know, Twitter polls and sort of like ownership projections going into last week, people still had Kamara as the higher owned guy, which I thought was completely crazy. I think it was just using too much narrative, too much like kind of hoping and wishing that something was going to happen rather than using all the basically all the things that have happened up.
What they've actually done in the past.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think people get really caught. I mean, look, we fall victim to this as well, too. Like there's times where where we fall the most victim to it is these brand new situations, like 1 week samples. But that really wasn't the case with Ingram. They had shown that he was going to play the most snaps. He just needed maybe a few more to hit some of that, realize some of that upside. You said the game gets out of hand. Like I said, that could happen again this week with Green Bay. They're heavy favorites going into Green Bay. We've seen New Orleans be better at home. They're going to be better on offense at home because of just the wet. You're not ever dealing with weather, and you have the turf to kind of run on there. Green Bay is a different situation, but still heavy favorites, and that's really what we're looking for in running backs. I don't think I'm going to have much of a problem going back Ingram's way, even with a slight price climb, because his performance was sort of in the bag by the time salaries came out for the next week. So his price does climb a little bit, but probably not enough to really not to knock him out of contention here. Only 7,100 on FanDuel is still a good spot. Let's talk about some of these other big volume running backs. One of the things we've been not seeing as much this season has been running backs with gaining over 100 yards. This week was kind of the flip the script on that. We have 1, 2, 3, 4. We had 9 guys that topped 100 yards. Some was just insane usage. Jordan Howard, 36 carries. Another week of Le'Veon Bell. Well, let's talk a little bit about Bell. We went into, I'm wondering your thoughts here now that the stats are in the bag. So we sat down on Sunday morning and we were basically, we had everything for us was pretty much finalized except for our running back two slot on FanDuel. We just couldn't. We were going to start Gurley in every situation, but running back two was where we couldn't decide. And we were really sitting down and deciding between Le'Veon Bell and Kareem Hunt. And the price for at this point for us did not matter. The $300 difference, it was not going to change anything else about our lineup. We were just basically just doing a heads-up play between Bell and...
Yeah, no halftime challenge, if you will.
Basically, except that neither of us felt was really confident about either one. But we ended up landing on Hunt, though now, again, I don't want to like do too much revisionist history here because we were trying to use all the relevant pieces that we had going in. Bell was such a better play. Is this a situation where we maybe should have just leaned a little more heavily on, look, it's Le'Veon Bell, and we just know that the Steelers, no matter what the game goes down to, are going to try to get him the ball like 30, 35 times, either through the ground or on the air. Whereas Hunt, we have less of a sample size, but he's been so good this year. I mean, do you think after looking at it that we made the right – do you think our decision-making process was incorrect in the result? Do you think it was correct in like sort of how we evaluated the situation going in?
Yeah, I mean, we were weighing these factors. Like, you know, I recall talking about that before we made the final call on that and saying, you know, are we going to look back at this in week 17 and say, remember that week where we played Le'Veon Bell over Kareem Hunt over Le'Veon Bell straight up? Jeez, like when are we going to learn that five games don't a season make, you know? And I think we also had the Vegas prop data that had Le'Veon Bell projected for more fantasy points if you just took their prop at face value. I think where we wind up erring on the side of was the fact that the Chiefs were favored, and we figured that would mean Kareem Hunt was going to be more likely to get the carries. And Bell was perhaps riskier, but I think that ultimately it was not great decision-making process because Bell isn't one of these ball carriers that loses his opportunity when the team is losing by a little bit. That's just not how the Steelers play. You know, he can go out there and get 10 receptions in a game if he, like he did the prior week, if they're losing, you know? So I do think the decision-making process was bad. I think basically we got rushed because we had been basically keying in on Bell for the whole week leading up to that game. And then I think the Vegas prop came out and we realized our yards were maybe a little low based on what people expected for Hunt, boosted that slightly. And then the fact that they were a favorite kind of got him into the lineup. So we were a little unprepared to make that final decision. Still worked out. I mean, the lineups cashed everywhere, but it could have been an insane week rather than a merely good one.
Yeah, I think I sometimes, just as a point of honesty, I sometimes get a little caught up in perceived ownership of where that's going to be, right? Like about landing on one side of a player or not, depending on like where his ownership is going to be. And I think for me personally, that Hunt, that was part of the Hunt decision for me. And that's like the one, I think I'm a pretty cold-blooded when it comes to like not being about just trusting the numbers and not ever getting wrapped up into like, you know, what a guy's done for me recently or like, you know, or even like what he did the week before. I think I'm pretty good about being able to knock almost all that out of my headspace. The one part that I have trouble with in terms of just from an analytics point of view is struggling with what I believe a player's perceived ownership or what his actual ownership is going to be as a narrative for like what some of our lineups look like. And I think that's the one problem. Sure. That's what, you know, in terms of like, you know, spend time getting better and spend time winning, get some time getting better. That's one place I could definitely improve is like, is trying to just forget that part of it, because in the end, that part doesn't really matter so much if all the numbers or other are kind of in line. So that's where we ended up with Bell, and he was amazing again. I mean, the Steelers, what are you going to do here? I mean, he has 38 implied usage of 38, 32 attempts, 6 targets. Where do we set his numbers going forward in terms of carries? Right now, he's averaging somewhere around 22 carries a game. 22.3 carries a game, 6.5 targets a game. Right now I'm at 22-7. I can't remember ever setting a player with this high of just this high of carries and targets. Do you think this is correct? I mean, is it low? We've seen games where he completely exceeds. It seems like this is like the complete baseline, no matter if they're winning or losing.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it the total baseline if they're winning or losing. Like we saw him get 25 touches 2 weeks ago. So I think that he certainly can come in under that if the game script's going against his favor. But what he possesses that no other running back in the NFL does, I think, are these, you know, 40-touch games. Like no one else has access to that. So I think on a week-to-week basis, he should pretty much always be the highest projected point total back given the current state of the NFL. We're also seeing Kareem Hunt, you know, if we're still looking over and it's not a decision you have to make this week on the main slate, but we're seeing that Kareem Hunt wasn't going to sustain his 8 yards per carry or whatever. So, you know, if you throw him out and then you have some of these other guys who are good, but less proven, I think you always prioritize Bell. The tricky thing is the sites are now going to make you pay for it. So Le'Veon Bell at 9,700 against Cincinnati, you would be only excited about his performance this season two times, two of the six games he's played on a $9,700 price tag. Do you see him being a play this week?
Nah, it's going to be close. The Bengals slow the game down so much that I think that's going to be if there's a decision that's ultimately kind of knocks him out of play. I think it's just going to be that they're a very slow team. I have to look at, I haven't looked completely into this yet for this week's set of projections. So that's where it's going to be kind of close for me. But I think, you know, pace of play really does matter, and the Bengals are a slower team. Any other running back? There was a lot of good ones. So I don't know if any of these other running back performances stood out to you. Those are the ones, obviously, that are going to stand out to me and most other people. But
I think we can focus a little more on Jordan Howard. The guy's 6,800 on FanDuel going into this week and just touched the ball 37 times and had 167 yards. What do you think about Jordan Howard? I mean, we're now on four straight weeks with, well, he had 19 touches 1 week, but four straight weeks with 19 or more touches. Good, actively good on this price, like really, really good on these prices. Two of those 4 weeks. And merely fine in the other week, just in terms of strictly how many points he's scoring. And by the way, relatively tough matchups in that time period too. Just in the terms of total points he's scoring, he's looking pretty good. Do you think Howard is at play at 6,800?
The matchup again is bad. Carolina, they're heavy underdogs. I think our from our system standpoint, it's going to be hard for them to get there because of those other factors. Like going in as a heavy underdog against Carolina is already going to ding you pretty significantly. He's another one that I struggle with about where exactly to put his kind of his usage. I probably am still thrown off by how little he touched the ball early in the season when Cohen was getting a lot of these passes. And so just probably trying to normalize out what I think his actual, like what their actual intentions are. It's clear Trubisky is a better quarterback than they have with Glennon though, but Trubisky's not very good either. Right. So like they got greatly increased quarterback play moving from Glennon to Trubisky, except that Trubisky's just like more athletic and probably it will be better over the long term, I think, but he's just too young right now to be really that good. I think it's just going to be the heavy underdog. They're not even that huge underdogs, -3.5. I think that's going to be the only thing that's stopping me from wanting to play him. But like I said, I'm struggling a little bit about where to set about what the Bears' plan are for him. Like right now we have him at, I'm just scrolling up to make sure I find him here. Yeah, I mean, we have him at 19 carries and 3 targets. That's a lot. That's a lot, and his projection is still pretty low going
in. Yeah, I think that's fair. How about Melvin Gordon? Melvin Gordon's another guy in this category where we pretty much know what we're going to get from Melvin Gordon, which is a lot of carries that aren't very good. He does get goal line touches, and now he's getting a ton of action in the passing game. I mean, 9 receptions for 67 this week and a touch. Last week, 6 receptions for 58 and 2 touchdowns. Almost exactly 31 fantasy points in back-to-back weeks. Is Melvin Gordon underpriced at 7,700, or is he just kind of running hot?
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. So at this point in the season for our projection, so early in the season, just as like a little window into how we do things, early in the season, we're trying to use narratives and, you know, what actually happens on the field to inform us, but not getting away too much from preseason projections. So if we had, you know, we have Melvin Gordon at somewhere around 16 carries to start the season, and then he has a couple weeks where that doesn't really happen, we move things, but not too much. Like, he started the year 18 carries, 9 carries, 17, and then 10. That, you know, it kind of can throw you off on a week-to-week basis because you don't want to take his carries down to 10, but you don't want to maybe keep him at 20 like we had them to start. Now, around this time of the season, teams have had enough time to play a number of different defenses and game scripts that I'm starting to be more willing to trust, not completely, and it changes for a guy. Like, if I wouldn't do this for, like, Ingram, let's say, where the situation has completely changed. But, you know, for a guy like Gordon, where all things are pretty much the same, it doesn't appear as if LA, the Chargers have, they've pretty much the same plan, I would say, as the beginning of the year. They just had some games go different ways. I think I'm fine starting to take what his season averages is, which is right around 17 and right around 7. I think that's pretty much fair. And when you look at him that way, again, the Denver matchup is not great, but when you put him in that range, he's close. And if it was just a better matchup, I would see him play. Where do you stand about using more season averages on touches at this point, dictating how we just kind of view a guy where nothing has really changed? Like Clipper, or God, I can't keep doing it again. First I call him San Diego, then I call him the Clippers. This LAC thing is going to be definitely. once my brain starts going two different directions with NBA and NFL, and there's two teams called LAC, forget about it. There's like,
Well, I was doing Oklahoma City, right, the other day when we had Oakland and some team with City in it. I can't remember yet. I feel it. So in terms of using projections that have lasted the whole season and the situation not changing, I think that's reasonable, but I think it's still not everything. Like, I think game script and context still matters a lot, again, because the guys who have played the most games have only played six games so far. So, yeah, on average, as like a baseline, take a guy like Leonard Fournette right now, who's, you know, just came out with another great game against the Rams. I think with someone like him, it's pretty reasonable. But if he were a two-touchdown underdog to New England, I would change it. You know what I mean? So, like, I think that it's still, it's totally fine to use the baseline projections, but I think we also want to use wisdom in just blindly shoving them in there and saying, well, sure, I know, I mean, I assume this guy has had access to every kind of game script, because that just hasn't been true for every team. You know, like Kansas City, for instance, hasn't been in a game where they've been heavy underdogs, and or I mean, I guess aside from week one, but that was sort of a surprising performance for a lot of people. But, you know, we haven't seen them trailing by two touchdowns. So what do they do when they're trailing by two touchdowns? They're going to trail by two touchdowns at some point, you know. I just don't know. So all of this to say, I think that it's a great baseline, and you can't be lazy in football. You can't just go use your averages blindly and then move forward on it, because if you do, you're going to wind up totally ignoring the fact that there are outlier cases where we just don't have, we haven't had access to them in every game script, basically.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's why it's like the getting, you know, projecting in game script is somewhat easy and somewhat difficult, right? Like, you can use, you can, Vegas lines are really, are pretty good for this in general, because you're going to find more often than not, you're going to find a team in a positive game script. That's why sometimes we can set our projections at sort of a baseline and let some of our other multipliers do the work for us, right? Like, you get, in our system, you get a nice boost if you are a favorite, and you get a nice, a nice ding if you are not a favorite. And so that's why, you know, giving Gordon 17 carries to start, let's say, is going to decrease his overall carries if they're like heavy, heavy underdogs. Or even if the game's close, it's going to keep him just basically the same. And then the pacing issues, you know, maybe I'm just getting too much into how the bread's made here, but you know, the pacing issues with Denver and just the overall defense is going to ding him as well. So we have a lot of this. That's why I don't mind setting some of these baselines there, because I know some of the other multipliers are going to take care of it just along the way. Any other running backs stand out to you? Any wide receivers before we get out of here for the day? We'll be back again, obviously, talking about our cash game plays coming up either Wednesday or Thursday this week. But there were some other big performances. Any other performances, either on the good or the bad side, stand out to you?
Sure, we can go through them relatively quickly. I'm still not going to trust your boy Derrick Henry. I realize that the carries kind of flipped there, and he out-carried Murray significantly, had 131 yards and a touchdown. Looked excellent overall. I'm still going to wait on more news from that before I just blindly trust him. He's cheap for sure, and some people will hear that siren song and go calling there, but I'm not going to play him in cash for sure. I think after that, you know, Jay Ajayi kind of is who we think he is, which is a guy that can put up big yards, but, you know, Miami's kind of erratic. Are Orleans Darkwa? Do you care about Orleans Darkwa? 21 carries and 117 yards?
Man, I got to tell you. So we were down in our big buy-in suicide pool, just with everyone else. We're down to our last, we were down to our last play this week, my brother-in-law and I, and obviously went Denver because, you know, why not go Denver? They're playing a B team, Giants team that just has zero chance to win. And then just completely on script, Giants go in there with nobody on their team and beat Denver. I couldn't believe it because it's me, but I couldn't believe it just from all the other all the other pieces around it. I mean, Darkwa, it's an encouraging sign to play this well against the Denver defense, which is about as good as it gets, right? I mean, that's a good thing. I don't think, and he's 2 weeks in. He had a big run 2 weeks before, and then now they showed they're going to give him the ball 21 times. I just think in the end, the Giants just aren't probably good enough to like to feel good about rostering a running back from this team. I know they had this game where NFL seems, I will say this, at the NFL at this point does seem like most teams are really close in terms of talent, and these little things can go one way or the other. Especially, you know, you put a team like with Eli Manning and Trevor Siemian as the quarterbacks, yeah, right? Those guys, I would call them basically just like the same in terms of talent. You know, one's a little younger, so he gets a little boost, and Manning maybe has whatever he has on his side. And then all the other pieces, when they slot around them, the talent levels, I think, are just the same. I think this is why you see teams like Miami's 3-2. Miami shouldn't be 3-2. Like, Cutler's been as bad as you can be, yeah. It looks like at times, and they somehow have three wins. You know, Giants going in with no receivers into Denver to face the two of the best cover cornerbacks in the league and maybe the best defense in the entire league and win. It just really speaks to me that the talent levels across the NFL are making things really hard to predict. I know I'm giving a long-winded answer about Darkwa. My answer is no, I don't really trust him. But really was my the last note. It went into like my last note had been like the teams I just couldn't believe. I couldn't believe Denver lost, sure. And I can't believe Miami's 3-2. And it kind of all just fit into that thing between Ajay and Darkwa in that when the talent levels are close, you're going to have these really weird games. And I think those weird games are going to make guys like Orleans Darkwa look better than they are. And I think if we take a whole season.
Oh, totally. Well, the Giants reminded me kind of like, you know, on like Halloween, you get back with your kids and they start eating their Halloween candy and you're like maybe talking to the other grownups. And you get the one kid who's just like kind of sitting quietly in the corner and he's just thinking, I'm just going to keep eating candy. And so at some point, I know someone's going to come and stop me, but I'm not just going to stop this on my own. That's like what the Giants looked like in the running game. They were like, listen, we're bad. We all know that we're bad. We're winning right now. Does anyone notice that? Like, look at the scoreboard real quick. We're winning. We just got to keep running the ball. Darkwa, Gallman, everyone. Vereen, get in there, guys. Come on. Like, let's just hope this game ends. We can move on with our lives. It's like the funniest game script ever. Eli, 11 completions for 128 yards, and they win. It's just amazing.
Oh, the football game is
all at once really fun and one of the stupidest games ever.
So anyway, end of my suicide pool. In a previous life, I was a Giants fan, so I guess whatever. I would say that they should have just lost and gone on 0-16 and taken the first pick. I know teams do a bad job of just like trying too hard sometimes. This is a clear thing. No one would have ever blamed you for losing in Denver. And then they just like jerks had to go out and win. Any other wide receivers?
I'm sorry, buddy.
I don't really care. Again, my fandom is pretty much well over in situations like this. I was rooting for Denver because of this stupid suicide pool. Any wide receiver stand out to you here? We had Jarvis Landry. Still like him from a targets perspective. His conversion rate is garbage. That's what happens when you have Jay Cutler as your quarterback. But Cutler just seems completely intent on throwing to him. And the good news for Landry is he's throwing to him in the red zone. That had not been the case with Landry kind of up until this point in his career. He was more of just like a middle-of-the-field possession receiver, throw these like one-yard screen kind of bump outs and then try to get him to run in space. They're doing a little bit more with him. And then in the red zone, too, he was a guy that stood out to me. Any wide receiver things that you're willing to change any of your opinions on going forward? Any of these guys stand out to you?
Sure. Taking a high-level look at the week, so first of all, this was the week with the most 100-yard rushers, and then it follows that this is the week with the fewest 100-yard pass catchers at the wide receiver position. So it's just Antonio Brown, Larry Fitzgerald, Demaryius Thomas. Fitzgerald, I think we love Fitzgerald and played him this week everywhere. He was phenomenal. I think that we're starting to see, like, he's a guy I think you can take a look at in that suggestion you made earlier of looking at the whole season stats and just kind of averaging them. Fitzgerald really fits that bill for me because he's just in the same role every single game. Sometimes it works out and it's, you know, this game against Tampa Bay or like the game against Dallas earlier this season. Sometimes you kind of split the middle and you get the Philly game and he scores 8 points. But nonetheless, he's still just a really, really solid, predictable sort of player as much as one can pass in the NFL. Knowing that he has this kind of upside, that he's done it on a repeated basis, I think you're still going to kind of come to expect that. A lot more expensive now. Like we've been playing him just kind of lock stock at 6,500, 6,600, 6,800 for the whole season. A big price jump this week, but you know, I do think the consistency is there. After that, we saw Adam Thielen, hugely owned, had the lowest targets on the season is 8. This week at 13 targets, 97 yards. Just another really good week out of a guy who I think is one of the more consistent receivers in the NFL. And the nice thing about Thielen that you get that you don't get from a guy like Fitzgerald is that he has kind of run bad in terms of touchdowns. So yeah, just no touchdowns at all so far is not commensurate with the level of usage that guy's seeing. So if you figure that's going to come back around, I think Thielen will be a great play. Yeah, after that, though, some one-offs. What do you think about Demaryius Thomas? I mean, 14 targets, 10 catches. Do we care? Denver was finally trailing. Maybe is this the plan if they're, you know, running bad?
I boosted his targets a little bit. He's a guy that did take over his season average because I liked the way they'd used him the last couple weeks. I don't like the quarterback play that from there just in general. So, and I think that they're going to most times just want to run the ball more than they're ever going to want to pass. That's just been how they sort of operate as a team. Just another week of us getting C.J. Anderson wrong, which is always a nice feeling. Played him twice this year.
We didn't play C.J. Anderson, did we?
Oh, I played him like – apologies. I played in my running back two slot on FanDuel. I played like 8 different cash lineups where I kind of moved that running back two round, and I did play him at like 20%. I mean, the system was very high on him. He was very close to top lineups and just missed on FanDuel where he didn't qualify.
We were geniuses. We knew C.J. Anderson wasn't going to be good. Don't listen to Doug. If you're a first-time listener, we hated C.J. Anderson. That's why he wasn't in our top overall lineup, and, you know, we purposefully moved him out of there, so –
the DFS bugaboos.
They don't know better, dude. They don't know better. So, well, it's so funny though. I mean, just to zero in on this for a quick second, like in a game like football where all the teams play basically every weekend, exempting bye weeks, you're only going to land on one exact permutation as your top overall lineup. And so it's kind of silly to evaluate a whole projection system based on the exact lineup that winds up being the top lineup, because the second overall lineup, the joke I'm making here, is the second overall lineup is projected like 0.15 points less. And where, when you bring in margin for error and standard deviation and stuff, is practically the exact same projection. So yeah, we like Anderson. It didn't work out. But that was mostly a game script thing from my estimation.
We've seen this from Thomas in the past. He can be a possession receiver. He's clearly has the skills. It's always just been kind of the quarterback play and the fact that they just don't want to pass as much, right? It's like I get worried about teams that just aren't incentivized to pass, and that is Denver. This looks like a close spread this week. He's a fine play, not great. And we could easily go back to Emmanuel Sanders kind of like getting double-digit targets, because I think he had out-targeted him for the season up until this point too. Now, I'm with you on all these guys, Thielen, Thomas. I like them all. They all did get little boosts in our system going forward, and then I'm going to take a look and write up some of our cash game plays for this week. Last week, it was all about, there was tons of running backs, just a bird's eye view. It does not look like that's going to be the case this week, which is going to maybe incentivize just playing a little safer guys with some of these huge volume. All right, we're going to go over and do an NBA podcast as well, so please go check that out. I'll put a link for our NBA podcast in our show notes here, so you can easily go and subscribe to that on iTunes. Getting ready for that season. We'll be back again either tomorrow or Thursday talking cash game plays, and then at the end of the week, a game-by-game breakdown for everything in Week 7. DFSR.com/NBA will get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system. That's optimal lineups for NBA, NFL, MLB, if you're still playing the playoffs here, all set to go, free for 3 days, and then for a very, very brief time, $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, talk to you in a second about basketball. Talk to you later in the week about football. It's a great time to be alive.
Yeah, sure is, dude. Talk to you then.